I'm very pleased to present this podcast of a Skype conversation with the distinguished painter Yang Li. Haverford College currently has on display a solo exposition titled Geographies. It's curated by Faye Hirsch, September 9th through October 7th, and then it will go to the Wilkes University, October 25th through December 18th. Of more than 100 paintings and drawings that Yang Li has done over the past 4 years. Ms. Li was born in Beijing, China, and emigrated to the United States in 1983. She has had many solo shows, including the New York Studio School, the Lohan Giedold Gallery in New York, the Elizabeth Harris Gallery in New York, Dartmouth College, Swarthmore, and many others. She has received numerous awards and has had her work reviewed in the New York Times, the New Yorker Art Forum, Art in America, Art Critical, Painter's Table, Hyperallergic.com, and many others. Yang Li is a professor of fine arts and is the department chair at Haverford College, Pennsylvania. Thank you tremendously for agreeing to do this interview with me. I've been a very big and long admirer of your paintings, and so thank you again.
Thank you for the chance to talk. You know, I read so much on your site. It's just so wonderful. You interviewed all these, you know, wonderful painters, and many of them I know, my friends, you
sure,
know,
sure. Yeah,
to read, you know, what they think about the paintings. You know, usually you don't talk about those when you...
You had first started making pictures as a way to cope with life after you were in China, forcibly removed from your junior high school to work on work farm in a rural area there during the Chinese Cultural Revolution. But this must have been an incredibly difficult time for you, and I was wondering if there's anything you can tell us about your early experience as a painter and as a teacher in China that helped, what shaped you today, you know, your work today.
Okay, I was born in Beijing, China, the capital of China, and a huge city. Always I see myself as a city girl, you know, then maybe that's part of the reason, you know, now I love New York so much. But then when I was in elementary school, I think I was second grade, my father sent to Anhui province, Hefei, the city of Hefei, which is the capital of the province, you know, to the college. And he was a scholar of Russian literature. So when the relationship between China and Russia fell off, so all these experts just sent to different places in the country. That's how we ended up in Anhui province. Then soon after that, Cultural Revolution started. He was arrested, you know, one night, actually, when we were all sleeping, and the people came in and took him away. And from that moment on, for 10 years, I didn't see him. For the next 10 years, he was in a labor camp. He never talked about his experience there, even after he came back home 10 years later. But for me, of course, it was a huge shock, because literally next morning, you know, people just stop talking to you, even look at you.
Wow.
So
your mother was still there, or?
My dad passed away. No, my father.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my mom is still in Hefei. Yeah.
Oh, no, but you were living with your mother then? I wasn't...
At that time, yeah. But soon after that, I was sent to countryside as, you know, actually the first year of a junior high. Literally, I didn't have any high school education, because I just sent... Got in the sense straight to the countryside to work with the peasants. I was not a rare case. There's so many people, especially in the academia, some kind of educational institution, you know, in these intellectuals, they all have some kind of a background. But being sent to the countryside so young, I lived with a group of students, and I was the youngest. It was I think it was just like a totally just lost. And also at the same time, you had to struggle to make living, you know, to make your own food, because we you know, right away you had to earn all those credits so you can trade them, you know, with food. And so you really had to work hard.
Wow.
For me to be with some of the other students, that was like a life saving. You know, always I like to draw, to doodle and paint when I was a kid. And so this was like a huge kind of advantage, because at that time they need people to do propaganda paintings in the village, paint the, you know, even like a revolutionary slogan and simple portraits of, you know, peasants, workers, and the armies, you know, that kind of propaganda work. I got a chance to do those. And that was just like a huge event in a kind of a miserable life. You got your hands on, you know, very, very limited material you could play with. And then you got a day off to work on those. That was great when you had a chance like that.
Did you make your own like compositions with that, or did you have to follow
Totally they're copying
other things, right?
Oh yeah, totally. There is a, you know, very restrict instructions and exactly what the image will look like, and pretty much you just blew them up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, put it on the wall of, you know, some kind of official building in the village walls.
Right.
So I worked in the countryside for 5.5 years in two places, because I broke my leg. At the first place, where it was very, very much like in the mountain, very hard to get around, you know, if you had problem with your physically. I couldn't get any medical treatment. And so the leg just got really worse and slow up. And finally, they sent me to another village, which was closer to the city. Also, it's more like flat ground. And from there, actually, at the time, I couldn't get anybody in the hospital get treatment, because all the doctors, hospital closed, doctors sent to also to countryside to get re-educated.
Right, right.
Or, you know, doing these barefoot doctors.
Sure, I've read about that.
In 74, then I got sent back to the city, because they just couldn't take care of me. The leg situation, it was miserable, but at the same time, it's like a magic, you know, because they couldn't take care of me, because of my leg. And so in the city, I started to get really serious, you know, to study art, you know. I found this painter who was like an official painter and a very good painter. And I studied with him privately. Basically, I just drew. You know, I drew anatomy, I drew every bones in the book, you know, things like that. And I drew just all night long doing those. And then the school started to reopen in 74. I desperately want to go to college to study art. But then I found out, you know, I was not qualified politically. You know, my very poor political background, you know, due to my father's, you know, all this crime, the so-called crime. And the revolutionary, you know, all the stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, so I couldn't even apply. I was just like totally desperate. I found where they did all the tests. I went there. I just drew, you know, the professor who came to the city, who was conducting the whole exam, didn't say anything. And later on, he fought for me to get me into the college. You know, that's really the first big break I had in my whole life. So I was in college. It was just like heavenly, even though we spent so much time doing political kind of stuff, you know, like a whole semester went to the factory, you know, to work with the workers. And then military training, you know, learn how to shoot and learn how to march, wow. You know, kind of stuff. But I just loved being in a college and painted. I couldn't paint enough, you know, I just, you know, just want to paint. And that time, you see, thanks to the communist system, if you got into college at that time, they cover your food and there was no tuition. You got some material you could use. Thank God I didn't paint this thick like now. Otherwise, I could just make one painting, then that's it. Oh, at that time, you know, I just painted. Actually, I got criticized for painting too much, sort of like ignored your responsibility to be a good citizen or just, you know, politically correct.
Right, sure, sure.
Yeah. So that 3 years passed, then the Gun of Fall fell, Mao died. And so the whole political situation changed. So that time I graduated, and another miracle, you know, they kept me in the college, and I started to teach, you know, right after I graduated. And so I was in kind of a, you know, art community. Because at that time, you couldn't just say, oh, I want to go here, I want to go there. And the government send you, station you, the place they want you to be. So right away, I started to teach in the university, the same department, for 6 years before I came to United States. And at that time, I painted all. We did a lot like commission work. And the commission work is not like here, you get paid or whatever. It's just like you are a government employee. You know, all your work belong to the party.
Sure.
Also, that time, all the artwork through political exam by the party. If the work couldn't pass that, then, you know, cannot be exhibited. Yeah, that's basically what I did.
So they would judge it by political content or aesthetic as well?
Both. You know, aesthetically, they're very much in a kind of Russian-French academy kind of a tradition. You know, it's very much representational and in a kind of a totally non-representational way. Because you have to paint this perfect image if it's like a politically correct character in the work.
Sure.
And if it's the enemy, and they look gray and blue, you know, you can't make them red cheeks. You know, just, you know, they have a, you know, code, you know, how to paint certain things.
Right.
So in that way, it's, you know, the most non-presentational, you know, representational. But we trained in a college in a very academic way and just drew those, you know, big casts for a whole semester, you know, with a very sharp edge, two-edge pencil. You know, at the time, I think I really enjoyed doing that. Yeah, because, you know, I'm really making things. Also, it's a very clear and simple thing to do. And you did right or you did it wrong. you know, very clear. But of course, I was totally not satisfied, you know, always, you know, I love color and I love emotional impact, you know, that kind of thing. But that time, there's no yourself there. And
were you ever able to talk with other people in private about your, you know, dissatisfaction, or you would never say anything, just keep your mouth shut?
You know, I was happy because I was just the fact I was painting just made me very happy. Also, we grown up in China by told what to do. So, you know, you know, here is a very clear assignment. You know, you do like this, you know, you make it look like that. And so I was able to do all those, you know, you get some kind of a satisfaction from it. You judge a painter if it's, you know, good painter, you know, a lot those, you know, that kind of ability count as a criteria. Besides those work, you know, in private, we did like portraits of friends, still life, painted some flowers, landscape. Yeah, that was a happy time, especially compared with what I went through in the countryside.
Sure.
Also, they're, you know, you're surrounded by people who have similar interests.
So how did you... met your husband there, and then you eventually came to the United States, right?
Yeah.
Was it through him that you got here, or how did you get here?
Okay. I met my husband, you know, future husband, Michael Gaster, who was a scholar of Chinese history, actually modern Chinese history. He was not Chinese. He was a native New Yorker and had a big nose. Yeah. And very cool guy. And we met at the top of Yellow Mountain where I was painting. So it's like magic. Yeah. That time, foreigners were not allowed to be in that area, actually. You know, he spoke this beautiful Chinese, and somehow he could got around. Yeah, that's how we met. And he came back, you know, we started to write, and he came back. I mean, obviously, we couldn't live together in China. So if we want to be together, I had to come to the States. So we decided to get married, and I start to apply. You have to apply to get married. And you had to get permission from your department, from the secretary of the party in your school, and from my parents. Can you imagine? You know, I was in my late 20s. Then had to go through foreign fair office in Beijing, different levels of this bureaucracy. And we didn't know if we could, you know, get permission, but we got it. Yeah, so that's how I came to States.
Wow, great. You moved to New York to Parsons School of Design, where you studied with Leland Bell. And
You know, the first impression was the physical look of the city. I landed in Newark, and I drove towards to the city, and that was sunset time, and it was like a miracle. I never saw that volume of electricity in my whole life, you know, because that time in China, everything just dark, 8 o'clock in the evening, and it was like, wow, you know, just incredible.
I can imagine.
And also, of course, the, you know, the outline of the Manhattan. Then the second day, I went to MoMA. So that was the first time I got to see Matisse, Picasso, Giacomo.
Wow.
That I didn't know, you know, Giacomo, you know, or Duran. You know, I heard the name, you know, I saw a reproduction of Picasso because he was a communist you know, for a short period, you know, China considered him as a friend, so we could see some reproduction, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Bernard, you know, that first trip, and I remember seeing that Cezanne's big bather, you know, that single figure, mm-hmm. standing figure, the boy on the beach, you know, my tear just ran down. It's just like, wow. I heard these names. I read these names in some kind of a foreign magazine, you know, way back. And the first time see them, you know, it's just like, wow, it's like a dream become true. And that evening, we went to Sweet Basil, now a jazz club, Abdullah Ibrahim, a South African jazz pianist.
Dollar Brand.
Dollar Brand, you know.
Sculpting. He's great. I've seen him myself.
Oh, man. Terrific. Well, yeah, the first time. I remember they played this piece called African River. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, first time I heard that music. Actually, that's not true because Michael, when we just met, he gave me two tapes. One is Bill Evans, and the one is Nina Simone. So that's what I heard, you know, jazz, you know. Wow. That's the first time I heard jazz.
Sure.
And then I heard the Dollar Brand, you know, the in person. That's the second day when I got to New York. And I thought, wow, this is a good life, you know. It's just amazing.
I can picture your smile.
Yeah, it's just like incredible. And I still remember, you know, those moments, just like, wow, how fresh, you know. Maybe that's why, you know, to me, going to museum and seeing these, you know, pieces hanging on the wall is such a special thing, you know, because I had that so late in my life. You know, I didn't, like, grown up, like, as a student, you go there with a class, your art teacher take you there, you know, I didn't have any of those. So for me, it's such a special thing. Also, another thing I want to say, you know, saw the de Kooning retrospective, 83, fall at Whitney. You know, first time saw de Kooning's work, I didn't wow. know he was. I remember his women, they got a whole wall of his women. You know, it just knocked me out. So like, how could you paint a person like that? You know, how could you paint a woman like that? It's such a door opening. You know, it's just like it give you permission, you know. Also, you look at the surface, you know, it's just it's totally different from what I had before, you know, what when I was in China, I never satisfied by what I was doing, but I didn't know what I really wanted to paint like. And when you've seen those things, it's just like, wow, 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 just flashlight all the time. But very soon, I was so lost. And I didn't know what to do with my own work. I didn't know how to paint. It feels like I just didn't know how to paint anymore. Despite I studied 4 years and taught 6 years before I came here. So I thought, I got to do some study, and we looked at a couple of schools. I like Parsons purely because I could just ride bike there, you know, from where we live. We live in Chelsea. I thought, wow, that's great. You know, 5 minutes I got there, then I can just start paint. Turn out these three professors, they're just great. You know, Leland Bell, Paul Resica, and John Heliker is another one. Mm-hmm. Three of them, they're all very, very different kind of painters. Also, you know, personality-wise, and, their concern in art also very different. But I learned from them all. I think Leland made most impact on me because he introduced me so much. You know, his best thing was like every Friday, you know, he just came in and they show a bunch of slides. And at that time, still slides. You know, he brought in those slides box and put in the tray, and they just like, you know, project one after another, you know, from Etruscan sculptures, Fayon paintings, and, Elion, so one, and the Duran and the Courbet. You know, he was very big in French. I see the reason, you know, people criticize him for that, but I thought, you know, this guy, he's so clear what he wants. You know, in a way, there's no compromise. You know, it's for him, it's really just like it's good or not good, and there's no in between, you know. And he really set bar high. You know, it's not like you just do what you want. You know, this is no good, then it's no good. And I don't think he was very much interested in seeing and or talking about student work. He won't talk about good stuff. You know, he was most energized when he was in the museum in front of a painting he loved. You know, he just like give you the whole world about painting. You know, I remember those moments so clearly. You know, it's just wonderful. Yeah, for me also, because I was not like a straight from college there. It rang bell when something hit me, feels like a click. You know, I just had those moments. I just knew I was on the track.
Was it hard to let go of your previous way of doing things?
It's not really. I see painting, the way of painting is really to what you had, and it's more like a reaction. And I knew what I painted, I didn't like. You know, when I came here, I brought very few things with me, you know, from the past. But then I just like started to paint really very physically. You know, I was not painting from my wrist. You know, always I paint standing, you know, just like, you know, standing there back and forth, you know, wiped it off. You know, it's always a very physical thing for me. So that's very different from in China. You know, I loved it. And also, I got good response from my professors, you know, classmates. So, you know, it was not hard. Yeah, it was just like naturally, just like keep going. Yeah, yeah, that's Parsons.
You primarily paint now from observation outdoors.
Yeah.
What keeps you tied to observation? Why not just paint in the studio where there's fewer distractions? And can you explain how your work might change if you didn't paint something you were looking at? What would that be like for you?
You know, painting outdoors, of course, your relationship with your motif is very, very different. And first of all, when you're out there and you are inside of it, and you are only very, very little tiny part of your surrounding, that kind of the perspective, also the scale is so different. It's not like something right in front of you. You know, I love painting people or still life, not so much. But that kind of being part of it, I think also that come sort of like in my Chinese background, I think it kick in somewhere here. Because in China, you know, people always, you know, in Chinese philosophy, you know, people, nature is one. They always talk about you're part of this. And you see those classical Chinese paintings, the landscape, they're always like a little person somewhere there, but they are so little tiny compared with these huge mountains. And you have to look into it to find these little scholar on a donkey cross these little bridge, these, you know, huge, you know, chunk of mountains right behind him, things like that. Or he was like in the valley, just like it's a very small part of it. I love that that sensation when I'm out there. Also, there's another thing. There is no already previously made focus. You know, for example, if a person sit there, of course, that is your thing. You try to put it on the canvas and you're dealing with the relationships of all the other parts and how that work with this person. But when you're out, it's like, wow, what am I going to do? You know, how I can, you know, make my choice, you know, right away. You know, you just like threw into this chaos and you have to make your decision constantly and quick. I just love that kind of challenge. I feel like I react better. Also, that really keep me on my toe. It's interesting. You know, I never felt I didn't know what to do when I'm out there, you know, because always right away I could just get into the painting. But in the studio, sometimes took me like forever to get started. You know, I could just sit there and stuff myself with all kinds of snacks and food and and listen to music and flip through some art books, you know. But when I was out, I just boom, you know, you're just right into the game.
I understand.
Oh yeah, I love that kind of feeling. Also, things change. The distraction in the way I welcome them because get me alert, you know, sort of always I think of a painting landscape, you know, I think about jazz, you know, how the jazz musicians sort of react, you know, to what's happening at the second. And then they have to make decisions. And then things change right there. And they just like constantly, they have to really listen, have to react to each other. That's how get things going. To me, you know, painting landscape out there, it's a lot sort of like that. You know, that kind of a distraction is really like open doors and help me to make decisions, what's the next. Yeah, a lot of things change. You know, I remember once I painted with a Lois Dodd in Vermont. She pulled out this very modest little palette, you know, few little tiny, you know, dubs of paint on the palette. And he pulled this little chair and they sit there. And then there was storm coming. And I just like I was just hurry up to pack things up. And she just sat there and they kept painting. And then she said, oh, it will pass. and pass. That was just like, you know, when you're out there, things like that happen all the time. Yeah. And in the way they keep me being surprised. And I think that's how to make, you know, really make the work in a way more personal and more kind of interesting by itself and not like, you know, systemized.
That's a good point. So when you're painting out there, is there like a balance between what you're looking at when you're there and then you're painting? Is there a point where you sort of say, okay, I've gotten enough from looking, now I need to focus more on the painting? Or how does that work for you? Everybody, I know, is a little different. Some people, they're, every stroke they make, they have to look first.
Yeah.
And others, you know, they go in a different way.
I think these two is really one thing. They're so tight together. Looking out and the looking in on the canvas. You know, these two, always I try to make that kind of a switch as short as possible. So I can really put down my reaction at that second, because that moment goes away really fast and that will change into something else and or the change into my kind of old habit could be. So these two, so sort of always together. In a way, it's kind of interesting. Always I start looking at something and then the paintings start to form and they start to reject. You sort of, in a way, it's like a wrestling then at a certain point, you know, every painting sort of like come out differently. Sometimes the painting I stayed more like on the side, more representational, because I feel like I really got the character of something right there, or the painting just worked. But the most time I try to just get past that point in the way that forced me look harder to really find a solution, because always I find that the solutions is out there. You know, it's something I haven't understand, and that there are these elements I need. So it's, you know, more, I look even more just like intensely, you know, really, you know, what I'm missing, you know, because a lot of time gets to certain point, the paintings start to feel like you're hitting on the wall. It's just like a stay, you know, it's just like a bounce back instead of going deeper. I know when I'm in that kind of a situation, I'm just like repeating myself, you know. So had to some way to get past that. And always the looking part kick in to give me keys. You know? Mm-hmm.
So would you say the looking helps you to get out of yourself more?
You
become, like you said, kind of like part of nature almost, you know, that you're not so self-absorbed and less likely to repeat yourself, you know, with a cliche or something you've done before, you know.
Right. And also, you know, that kind of a process, especially I find when I work longer in the piece, I get less self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So the things, you know, start to happen, or things I'm not familiar. Always the painting looks so ugly or whatever, you know, but that's kind of a good sign. That means I'm somewhere different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember I read something John Cage said, you know, I'm not that crazy about his music, but I thought that passage was pretty cool. You know, he was somebody's student, and he said, you know, the process in the studio, you started with a bunch of giants or friends or whoever, you know, then they start to leave one by one, and you hopefully you could get to the point you yourself even not there.
Right.
So that's a very good passage. Yeah.
I think Philip Guston said something like that too.
Maybe that was Guston's studio, could be.
Yeah. The Frank Auerbach, I would think he would be somebody that you would like, you know, your work as an affinity with his. He talks about that too in the interview with him. I think he talks about, you know, the importance of losing yourself, you know, of getting, you know, transcending your self-consciousness.
Right. Or what do you think it should look like, you know?
Right. Are you more interested in painting the experience of being in nature? I seem to remember you hearing you say something about that. You're painting your experience of being in nature over description, or is it both? Can you say something more about that?
I think it's totally both. The description part, I think, I talk about it just being there, and that totally affect how you see each place. That's why, you know, travel to different places is so important for me. You know, it's like when you in a new environment and your perception, it's sharpened, and also, you know, it's different from what you're seeing somewhere else. You know, before you think about the mountains, I just remember first time, you know, I saw the mountains in Switzerland, and the first time I saw the mountains, you know, in Telluride, they're so different, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the painting really showed those. And so so that's part of like being in nature, being in different places. You know, of course, this is two different things. Being in nature, that's a much bigger framework than just being in the places. Being in nature is like you're out there. You know, I was talking about before, you know, the experience of just painting outside, you know, being a little part of it. And then, of course, being in a different place, you know, how your sense just like react just differently. The description, I don't quite understand the word description. Okay, let's say, you know, we paint what we see. That seeing part is so much to do with one's mind state. You know, for example, you know, I was in Switzerland two times and I was Cranberry a few times, and the painting each time come out so totally different from the previous times. It's not like I wanted to do that. It's just like they just react so totally different. So these two things, I thought, you know, they're so together. You know, I don't know how to get, you know, make my answer clear over this.
You know, I think it's really true. You know, one's personality makes a big difference. You know, like you get five painters in front of a scene. Even the same five painters, you know, 2 weeks later, they're all going to be very different paintings, probably, unless, you know, they're not really looking.
Yeah.
Sometimes the people, they just paint their idea of what the place looks like, and they're not really seeing it. But everyone, you know, with your personality, you see different things or are more important, or you find different essentials.
Right.
And, you know, clearly your work is very unique from what, you know, like, say, Richard Estes or somebody like that is going to, or Rax Draw Downs is
right.
going, or Lois Dodd. You know, everyone is such a unique vision. And I, you know, when you talk about your painting, your experience of being in nature, I just find that so intriguing because so few people say that. They usually talk about, you know, responding to what they're seeing, you know. But it's really, you know, it's really more in a way about the experience, you know, your personal experience being there, you know.
Oh,
no
yeah.
one really cares about all the leaves on the tree. They want to, you know, get what's your summation? What's your vision of the summation of the tree, you know, as a picture, you know?
Yeah. Also, I think the description also comes in like a, let's say, you know, each time you painted the same thing and your thinking's different. And your focus kind of different. So what you're painting there, it's very different. There is no like just one kind of a description, you know, even for the same person, even like, you know, could be in the same day.
Right, right, sure.
So there's so much to do with your experience as a person at that time, to the place and to what you see.
Painting is a summing up and has always been a summing up of a spirit activity through sight. And also that, you know, that painting makes nature more visible in a way than photography. And I'm curious if you had anything to say about that.
Okay, the first one, the summing up, you know, that is so true. It's a really accumulation of, you know, so many different things, and so many accumulation of different paintings in a way, in one painting. You know, in terms of the process, you know, the process make huge a difference here. You know, from these, you know, hours of work, the process and the days, you know, could be, you know, months and years spending on this one piece. That kind of experience is so different from you see something, you click. You know, that's totally very different experience. And of course, painting is summing up. You know, this is like your your history, your understanding about everything and your personality, and also maybe just something you just saw, you know, you know, could be piece of work you just saw in the museum that, wow, you know, I see right here, you know, or something you didn't like, your previous paintings that I'm not going to go there. You know, just all these kind of decision makings in one session. You know, it's just it's complicated. I think that part of why I make talking about painting so hard, so complicated, and it's mysterious how that happened. Why not like that? Painting makes nature more visible. That is quite an interesting one. And, you know, there are two parts. First of all, I would just say physically, painting is totally related to nature. And the physical look and even the material we use, there's so much, you know, comes straight from earth. So that kind of connection, so direct. Also the surface, doesn't matter what kind of surface, there is surface. Let's say the white painting and there is a surface. But if a white photograph, piece of paper, put it there, that's a paper, you know? So that's just like totally different.
Right, and then, right.
Yeah, so the painting, itself, it's a piece of nature in a way.
That's why it's so important for people to go to museums and galleries and see the work for real, not just on their computers.
I know. I just like just talking to my students about, you know, the difference. You know, I had them sign up to do this master variation. You know, they choose El Greco. You know, the painting come out. You know, I said, you know, you do a copy as close as you can. It come out, of course, it doesn't look anything like El Greco. I said, you know, go to PMA, take a look. What does it look like? Take how he painted that. You know, just imagine what kind of brush he used. You know, what kind of palette. So student came back and just go, oh, you know, totally different. Of course,
right,
totally
sure,
different.
Sure.
Yeah, so that kind of experience. But of course, photographers will argue about that. You know, they will say, you know, seeing photo in person and in print is very, very different. I agree with that, but not as, you know, crucial as a painting, you
sure,
know.
Sure.
Because painting is really like a become an object. It's you know, really has a life there.
There is a U.S. premiere of the composer Curtis Carpacciocco's new piano sonata, which is inspired by your artwork, be performed September 21st. There's also a video made by John Thornton, which is made along with your artwork. I was hoping you could tell us a little more about this.
Okay, Kurt is a music professor here at Haverford College. And he teaches composition and the piano. He himself is a fabulous pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And his music is very much grounded in the classical Western music, but at the same time, all different kinds of things cooking, you know, very contemporary. But at the same time, you know, you feel the bass there. You know, that's sort of like that kind of a painting I like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always, you know, I love his music. And, you know, he liked my work very much. And we did, you know, collaborative work. I did a bunch of CD covers. And this piece, he wrote, literally looking at this video, you know, shots of, you know, he called it the interior of my paintings, you know, close up and got into this, you know, little caves and, yeah, it's just sort of like your travel in it. Also, this video also showed some of our collaboration, you know, I was painting and he was, you know, playing the music, and I was drawing him. One piece will be in this show. you know, it's like a sketch of him. I thought it was pretty good. It looked just like him.
Have you been back to China since you?
Yeah, not that regularly. My mother's still there, and of course I love to see her, to see my friends, but I'd rather go to Europe to paint. And I just cannot paint in China. I guess it's too much baggage on my shoulders.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is there many people doing landscape painting there now, like contemporary outdoor painting?
You know, I'm so...
Or do you not really follow it closely?
I'm not really follow it. I feel like I'm so remote from it. You know, I do see people, you know, landscape paintings, also, you know, the Chinese painters, you know, their landscape paintings. It's very different from, you know, what the classical Chinese paintings are. But at the same time, you know, the elements are still there, you know, mm-hmm. you know, about the, you know, what we talk about, the brushwork and the control. You know, the control is such a big part in Chinese painting, calligraphy, but at the same time, you know, how you can free from that. You know, I always thought that kind of a process, evolution is so interesting, you know, in very controlled and very limited, narrow kind of a window, you know, then how you can, you know, come out of that. You know, just quite amazing. Mm. Yeah, but I'm not really following, you know, Chinese contemporary scene. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just not there enough to, you know, to comment on that. You know, I just feel like I just got out of there. I'd rather to go to London, you know. Yeah.
See the Auerbach show?
I did.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That must have been really good.
Did you see it?
No, I want to, but I don't know. It's so far.
You know, it's interesting for a period. When I was at Parsons, I just like, wow, this is cool. This is just great. You know, I was like obsessed with him and Giacometti. Now I feel like, you know, they're very remote. I feel like I haven't looked at his work for quite a long time. But I look at the show, to me, I think he's a great painter, and his devotion and his like an obsession, and he's like a single-minded, you know, all those. And the paintings can be very, very powerful. There are some paintings that are just very powerful. And I'm not that crazy about his landscapes. You know, I feel, you know, I think some of these portraits, those heads, you know, they're really powerful. They're really transformed. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, there's so much about what human is about. But his landscape feels like, you know, lack of what really landscape painting is about. The first room, I think he put together the first room. Yeah, quite a few rooms. And those early work, I thought that they're just like great. They're very powerful. It's like he tried to figure out. They're so packed with the emotion and also physicality and the struggle, you know, just so much of this stuff. Mm. So, you know, Leon Kossoff is another one. It's just in a way, I feel Leon Kossoff's work is even more personal somehow in terms of the, I feel like he's more connected with his motif.
I would think Stanley Lewis would be somebody who you
might
like. His landscapes are just so powerful.
We're great friends. I have so much you know, respect to his work and also him as a person. So like he is great person to be around. You know, we taught at Chautauqua for a few summers. And I saw, you know, the way he worked. I thought I paint pretty hard. I work hard, but when you see him, it's a, I'm immature. You know, it's like.
Oh no! Why? What does he do that's so different?
Oh yeah, it's not different. It's like that, you know, that kind of intensity and the focus. You know, he's like every every morning, got up at 5 o'clock. Then so like he just like, you know, stuffed some cereal in his mouth, then just disappeared right down to the basement where his studio was, you know. I don't think he still teach there anymore. Then he start painting, and then he sit in this little shed he built himself. Actually, he offered to teach me how to build the shed, you know, so I can carry around or can build something like that wherever I, you know, I go paint. And then he just sit there, you know, he's like a little high, kind of a little kind of a higher, you know, a sit there. And his easel, his canvas is right there. And the little tiny brush just goes like hours, hours. And hours, you know, it's just like, and his wife Karen brought food back for him. And then the evening, he just like, I think he just so exhausted and fell asleep on the little rocking chair. It's like 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just next day, the same thing. Next day, same thing. When you see that, yeah, it's so inspiring. It's so inspiring. Yeah.
Well, your work is very inspiring to me to look at, and hearing you talk as well. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you again for doing this interview.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It was a real pleasure to talk with you.
You know, I hope someday we can paint together.
Well, geez, that would be a dream come true. Thank you.
That would be so cool. You know, I'd love to do that.
Do you ever go back to Monte Castello, to Italy?
You know, I haven't been Monte Castello for so long, but I'm planning go back to Ascona, Switzerland.
Ah.
Yeah, I can go back there, and I'm going back to Telluride, Colorado, actually in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
I teach a workshop, and I love that place, and it's just great for painting, and I love people there, you know. Last fall I was there, I had just great time, and some of the paintings I did there will be it's in this show, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm going back to teach a workshop and then paint. Yeah, and also I would love to go back to Rome. You know, my dream, the current dream will be, you know, stay in Rome for like at least a month, just paint on the street, you know, see what happened.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's so great.
Maybe you paint in the Forum there. Would that interest you? In the ruins?
You know, I can paint anything. Paint, you know, anything. Really, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I had this moment yesterday. I walk out of my office right here, and a bunch of cars, you know, the boring looking building in the whole world. Then there's like these giant old trees back there. Somehow, you know, just for a moment, I started to see painting. I thought, oh, I could just paint right here, you know. Really doesn't matter. But
so you live in New York or in Pennsylvania?
I'm in my office at Haverford College in Pennsylvania.
Right. But right. I saw you had a studio in Manhattan too?
Yeah, I do. I just like, you know, all my salary is going to the rent of the studio.
Oh, I see. So you commute back and forth?
I do. Uh-huh. I do. Yeah, and pretty much every week, you know, I go back. When I'm not teaching here, I back also because I've been working on this cityscape from Michael's Window.
Right,
and
right, I saw that.
Still working on those.
Oh,
yeah.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
It was very impressive display to see all of that. That must have been a very important piece for you to work through all of this. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, I thought that that's the best thing Michael did for me. And also it's the best thing I did for myself, you know, after he's gone. You know, I just painted through at his place. you know, it's just like it's really wonderful. Now I sort of I can talk about this, you know. Before I couldn't, you know. It's sure. Just so awful, and yeah, it really helped me, you know, to get going, keep going, yeah. And I have so many paintings I want to do from the window. Yeah. Good. Also, New York is, you know, it's a great place for painting. Yeah. Maybe someday we can paint there.
I would love that. I would love that. Well, thank you again so much.
Bye.